Because I can tell you this, our people knew the River Murray had flooded in 2010 and 2008. And I wrote to the minister, I thought, we've got a problem. We make errors too because we don't write down. So I thought, heavens, I better start writing some of this stuff down and showing that we do know what we're talking about. So I wrote to the minister in 2009 in August and said the River Murray will flood in 2010, which it did. But that's why they got the double flood. If they had known that knowledge and could have accepted it, they'd have let the water go and the Ivanhoe Dam long before they did. And I didn't know the dam was there. And that's why they got the double flooding, because they're trying to save the water. But even the bloke told them in 1975, you shouldn't have full dams in the tropics because it's dangerous. But see, they should have let the water go long before that. But see, we've got no validity because we've got no record of continuity and making sense of it down the line either. So we've got to start doing that and putting the dates down all the time and telling them in advance. So in the end they think, oh yeah, they do know what they're talking about. Because even when I told them, you know, about the River Murray, and when I told them about, I told them in 2009, some of the people along the river noticed that the pelicans were laying eggs and trees, so that gives you a sign and what to watch. And that's what we do. We watch everything. We watch the birds, we watch the spiders. So we connect the whole ball game, because that's what you have to do if you want to live with the environment and help each other. You know, you've got to notice all the things that are going on, because we've been doing that for centuries. Because it's inbuilt probably in our DNA to do that, because we've been through ice ages and the whole ball game. So you keep doing these things naturally, because we weren't into the interest of telling people about this, because we're just interested in living and just managing and trying to do the best. But now we're seeing that people are talking a lot of nonsense, and you know that, because I'll tell you this little story, and it hit me when I read it. Avogadro, he lived in 1876, and he saw Dalton did an experiment when he said he took 1 pound of oxygen and 1 pound of hydrogen and made 1 pound of water. And he was a professor of physics at Turin University in Italy. And he said to his students, what's wrong with that statement? Well, see, what he's proven here is even scientists don't write scientifically. They only write what they've seen, what they've done. But see, technically, that's a very bad statement to have one and one equals one. You can't do that. It's not technically correct. So there's that man then with no experiments, just purely looking at an experiment by another man, invents molecules and moles. And they didn't come into vogue till 10 years after he died, because one professor thought about it and he said, that man's right. Because what he's saying is this, to be technically correct, if you take 16 molecules of oxygen, 32 of hydrogen, you make 48 of water. That makes a proper equation. It's a proper scientific statement. And see, people don't even view things like that. They don't even tell stories to each other like that. That's what we do. We tell stories like that that make sense of the universe. And so that's what people should be doing in modern time. They should be telling the story of Avogadro. But they only tell you this, how to use moles and molecules. Really, the real secret of that story is to tell how he did it. That's more value than using moles and molecules. Because it tells you how the universe works and how it should work and how it's structured. And he's made a structure that's workable. And that's what people should be on about, things like that. That's a very clever thought. And you think, that's what our people did. We get clever thoughts, we just pass those on. And so that's how the world should work. Not just say, grab this is how you use it, make that work, yeah, away you go. You should tell stories, and that's what our people said. Every subject, you really should have an introductory story that is pertinent to the argument and what you should be learning about. And that's what our people teach us the same way. And other people are starting to think this way. And this is where we've got to share information. We've got to share information that we tell stories that are pertinent, that make sense to the environment, and then we all gain from it, because we're all on the same page and we see how it works, and then we make a better society, because we're all thinking about them. And that's what our people got people to do. They came to these conferences, and they all work together. And you look at it. If you read Bill Gammage's book, you show that. He talked about this country as the biggest estate on earth, because he read all the diaries, and he suddenly made sense of it. Because even in Captain Cook in 1770 saw there was no undergrowth under the forest. Well, he's looking at Queensland. But it wasn't only Queensland, it was all over the country they did it. And even I thought, how the hell did we do that? There's the whole country is doing biostatic farming, and I reckon it comes from the centre of the country, from the Mardu people. But the Mardu's got more words about fire than you can throw a stick at. They've got coal fire, hot fire, this fire, that fire. And you're thinking, wow, they must have taught all of us how to do that. And I thought, how did we do this? How do you get the whole country, which is, well, it's, when you look at it, it's more than one country. It's 250 nations living in this one large island, all doing the same thing, because they're all convinced it's correct. And they're all lighting fires and making it work. And then you think, how do they do that? And then I had to think for a long time about that. And then I suddenly realised we've got this magical suffix, Arlu, R-L-U. And I thought, wow. And if I said to you, Nalulu Kumanka, we shall do something now together. And that's what I found is in all our systems. I found it was, I was doing that when I was counselling kids in school. I said, what do you want to do? Well, go and do that now. Come on, we'll go and get your uniform straight away. And so you always, you don't say to the kid like most counsellors do, now I've told you what to do, now you need a uniform, go and get it from that shop over there. Well, we don't do that. We say, now, we'll go and get the shirt, I'll go and see the lady, now you come with me and we'll fix it up. And we'll get you started. Now, this is how you do it. Now, you do some of the rest yourself. But see, you've got to give people introductions and how to do it. Take them to the place they're not familiar with. Show them the ropes first, and then they'll be able to do that themselves after. See, you've got to do a progressive showing you how to do it. You've got to do something together now. You've got to really take a people down a pathway. And I thought, how clever is that? And that's why they did it to the whole country. And they did it in multi-subjects. Because I know that we didn't look at the stars much. We were educators. We told people how to educate children. And then I saw that we named every star in the heaven. And I thought, wow. And then I heard about the Bulldog. And they prided themselves in knowing more about the stars than anyone else. And they obviously taught us. We should get an abortion lake and see going by the stars. Paul Curnow's got a whole sequence on them. Got all the names we put up for stars and what we call them. And we named every star in heaven. Well, that's what in our 4 days we learned off of them. And they said, right, come on, we'll do it now. Come outside, name it one name. What are you going to name it? And so we named all the stars in the heaven. And so you suddenly see the sense of doing some of these things. Noticing everything around you and even looking at the stars and connecting it all. So you're making a connection with the whole ball game. Stars in the heavens, all your earth and your trees. Because see, that's how our people looked at this country. They looked at it as a university. He said, you look at the ground, and he said, you walk it, and it's our university. But he said, my uncle told me in the end, he said, it's no good walking this country, it's messed up. He said, it's a waste of time, you have to go up on the hill now. And that's where I am, up on the hill in the university. Because he said, the country's been wrecked. They filled in all the creeks, they've cut down all the trees, they've made a mess of it. You can't learn anything from looking at the environment. Because it's in dire straits, and that's what he told me then. That's what we have to do something about. But he's telling you, your university's destroyed, that means your land, and you can't learn off it anymore. Well, you've got to do something about getting it back to where it was. Then I see Ken's shown us thing about this housing. Well, I thought an Aboriginal bloke came up with an incredible thing about that. And his name's Yami Lester. He's a young Jarrah man, living up in the pitlands there. And you know what he devised? Well-being in houses. And what's well-being in houses? He said, there's no good living in a house where the tap doesn't work, the toilets doesn't work, there's leaky roofs. He said, you've got to fix up all the house so it works. And then when you do that, you can live in you can live in harmony with things. See, we're doing the same with housing now. And my lad worked on that for 10 years. Now, they won prizes, this group. And there was 11 blokes around this country doing well-being and housing in all the Aboriginal environment. And what did the government do? Cut that out. And you think, why did they cut it out? And you know what they said? Well, you people are fixing up these houses and that made you make poor housing development. He said, these people have come and build a house and don't build a property. And you think, you've got to be joking. What are you saying? You can build a house that's going to last forever? You're not going to fix the tap, put washers in, or the loop's not going to leak? You know, give us a break. And yet, they're doing that all the time to us because they don't really want to go down the road of proper management, and I don't understand that. I get bewildered at that. How could you have a well-being program and win prizes and then cut it out? And they make this stupid argument that, oh, you allow builders to build poor housing. And I thought, that's going to be stupid. And that's what we get all the time. All the time we start these programs that are very well thought out, and yet they cut it out. Because they don't want you to know how you can live better or something. I don't get the argument there, because I thought well-being in houses is a good thought in itself, isn't it? You should live in a house that works. Anyway, I'll probably talk to a fair lot of
them. If we in this room were very passionate about creating an outcome that focuses on the betterment of people and our environment at the same time, how would your understanding of traditional knowledge actually start to take that into consideration, where we start to get people, like everyone here or everyone in our city, to start to think that our cities and our buildings have to be aren't only our shelters, but also our well-being. How do we communicate that to everyone else from your traditional perspective?
Well, see, we treat the house as the same as the environment. Everything has to work properly. See, why do you have to have a leaky tap? Why do you have taps that screw and old people can't put levers on them? You know, all these sort of additives you need to make the house livable for whoever lives in it. And so we see the sense of that in everything we do. You know, you've got to make the environment or the house livable. And you've got to be in equal partnership. You know, that you've got to do the right thing, but the house has got to do the right thing for you, doesn't it? It's got to have everything that works. You know, you can't have leaky roofs, because then you get mould and you get sick. And see, all these things play up on you. And so you see all these things. You go around and you see people living like this, and you think, this is not right, this is not sensible. We should really take care of the house the same as the environment. It's all interlocked. It's not separate. Yes. See, everything you do is interlocked. See, this business of saying, oh, we just deal with housing now, it's not. It's the same subject, isn't it, when you start thinking about it? It's interwinding all the things together and make it work for you. And that's how we should be looking at everything. You've got to make the environment work for you, you've got to make the housing work for you. Everything's got to work for you in your benefit. Yes. See, we're starting to do little things like that. Well, see, like taking lead out for cars was a good thing. You know, things like that was killing us. Because
yeah.
I've seen kids jumping around. Because I went to a school where the kids were overdosed with lead, and that was in Theberton. And it only happened by accident. The bloke said to these principal, he said, can I put a meter in your yard? He said, yeah. When he read the meter, he said, yeah, it's the highest reading we've ever had. And so then I seen our kids there, and our kids pick it up quick, and they were hyperactive, and the only thing they'd given was vitamin C to get rid of the lead out of their bodies. And that's the same thing that happens in Port Pirie. All the kids get dosed up with lead there, and I've heard the stories about Port Pirie. They used to have lead running in the streets. Till they got the German bloke and put all those bags in the funnels to collect, you know, you've got to have collectors to collect all that gear out of the environment. See, you've got to have collectors to collect dust. I've seen that at Peterhead at down the port, where the cement company's next door, and you see all that rubbish gets into that. And that's the highest area of dirt in the country or in the state.
I think a lot of those aspects that you were talking about, how what you said before is that you'd have some unforeseen circumstances toward whatever decisions you make, and yes, especially when it's as serious as the built environment. So I actually think that's it's a very good segue into a lot of the ideas that I want to be able to talk about to everyone else, and actually maybe get everyone to have an idea of what we really expect out of the built environment.
Can I ask Uncle Lewis one more question?
Yes, of course.
Hello. I was thinking that back in the time before colonisation, everyone would have probably helped each other with housing. It wasn't just like, you've got to go off and build your own little wheelchair and I'll build mine here.
No.
But people would have helped each other set up what
yeah,
was
they
necessary.
Did. Everyone helped each other, because that's where it was. And see, a lot of people even don't know about wheelchairs. Wilkes is a really brilliant sort of idea, and I didn't realise it. I read a report on it, like test them. Inside a wheelchair, 70 degrees all the time. You don't need air conditioning. And they even had blocks where you could move in and out to let the air in and out to make the temperature rise. And so it's a very clever structure, actually, because makes air as an insulator, because the spinifex catches the air, and so it makes that wall that keeps the heat out and the cold out and makes this warm environment inside. So it's a very clever structure in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And see, and there's another thing that comes into it. See, if you look at this space here, this is a big space. And look at us, we're all sitting here miles away from the roof and, mm-hmm. and, this, and the back wall. And yet it'd be, take a lot of power to get this room warm. Even the Swedes have come up with a good idea. You don't warm the house, you warm the person. So I thought that's a very clever notion. See, that's the sort of thing we'd go by, you know. How's that for thinking? That's a different thought in itself, isn't it? Don't warm the house, cost too much. Warm the person. Mm. So they have runners in the floor that just warmed you. Mm. And I thought, wow, that's the way we've got to think in the future. See, that's the clever ideas we've got to incorporate with people. Because we woke up, and see, when you look at a wheelchair, it's very small, so it's not hard to keep a small space warm. But when you made it bigger, it's going to take a lot of effort to make it warm or cold or whatever you want, isn't it? It's harder to manage. Because living in a house is very difficult if it's not built right. It's a very difficult thing to do.